KSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Today, we have a treat that is a continuation from last week. I'm Charlotte Farrell, host of Suluau, where my guest and I, speak up so you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. Today we are doing a further examination of how you can act upon what we're hearing about the fate of democracy. We have three guests. Nestor Burgos, he's a member of the National Union of Journalists in the Philippines, North American chapter. He's the former national chair of NJJP, a former reporter of the Philippine Daily. He contributes also to the Toronto-based Philippine Reporter. Other guest is Maki Cairns, and Maki is a member of Gabriela, a grassroots Filipino women's and LGBTQ plus organization that fights for the rights and welfare of Filipino women in the Philippines and abroad Canada. They are an overseas chapter of Galapine of Philippines, which is a grassroots-based alliance of women all over the Philippines seeking to wage a struggle for national democracy of all oppressed Filipinos who identify as women and LGBTQ+. Our other guest is Rochelle Hardman. We are just full of a brilliant journalist today. Rochelle Hardman is an activist, part of ACNAC Bayan, progressive youth organization fighting for national democracy in the Philippines and for the rights and welfare of Filipino youth abroad. Last week, we were very excited in taking you, our listeners, into a meeting where the issue of democracy, the erosion of democracy in the Philippines and Canada worldwide, and somewhat also looking at the role that AI has played. So you are going to be the first CJSF listeners to hear some of the things that were suggested that people could do, where at a neighborhood and community level, we have to learn how to identify fake news, learn how to not just see one side, but to dig a little bit. On our phones, everybody has the opportunity every hour to get news that is slanted. So we're going to listen to our guests talk about some of the things last week that were proposed, and also give us an update on the Marshall McLuhan presentation that was made last week.
Last week on March 4th, we had our Marshall McLuhan event with Pierre Renata, and it was a really great event in turnout. And we really talked about the current media situation under Marcos, as well as kind of a throwback to Duterte, as well as kind of the ways in which Ossol Rappler is kind of using or innovating, basically, how to navigate media in this current age, since we hear this phrase, journalism is dying all the time. So the ways in which, Rappler is having applications where people can communicate on certain issues like elections and stuff like that, communicating with government officials around typhoons and stuff like that, and also creating their own kind of AI, but with human beings behind it, basically talking about Philippine news and how to get authentic and real Philippine news on the ground.
Maki, could you explain what Rappler is?
Rappler is a media outlet that the Marshall McLuhan Fellow writes for. So the Rappler was under attack for a very long time under the Duterte regime. So that's the news outlet she works for. And she was kind of talking about how Rappler is navigating the current state of media, specifically in the Philippines, amongst kind of ongoing attacks and the changes in technology.
Oh, thank you. Nestor, did you want to amplify what kind of response did you get at the community level, and then other ways people could be involved?
Yeah, Charlotte. So I think the common thing which is happening in the Philippines and also here is that because of the changes in the industry, because of people are get their news now online, and sadly not from news organizations and journalists. Most of the people get information and so-called news from bloggers, YouTube, TikTok. So it affects the way how people get information, which was shown to be detrimental even in the last elections in the Philippines, where the narrative about now President Marcos was dictated on the audience and not by journalists. So it affected how people voted, which led to the son of a former dictator being elected into office. So that's one of the challenges of the news industry right now that is also happening here, even in Canada. And I think that was raised in the forum, and that the speaker, Pierre Anada, aptly emphasized that we should encourage how the public should get information to make sure that they get from journalists and news organizations and not rely on other sources of information, especially social media. So that's how the committee and the public could really help journalists and news organizations, and at the same time keep themselves informed about what's happening not only in the community but in the world.
Rochelle, with working with youth, do you find that there are youth today who are more interested in trying to get accurate information into journalism, or wanting to get into pop news?
That's a very interesting question. When it comes to relaying, let's say, just not just current news, but even talking about history of our own, like Filipino history, a lot of the times the reason why people or Filipino youth get involved in organizing or starting even like having an inkling of any political consciousness is through like social media. So a lot of the information that they get comes from like TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, like memes and et cetera. So it was interesting to actually go to the McLuhan Fellowship program and actually understand how journalists are adapting to that kind of shift to in order to approach like the youth particularly, because sadly not a lot of youth are interested in reading like long form articles or even sometimes short form articles. A lot of the times it's through video or visual means. So that's kind of like the perspective I saw when we were at that program last week. Quite an interesting point of view, actually. But nowadays, for sure, youth are so much more engaged with visual impacts like that. TikTok, Instagram reels, etc. So adapting to that is incredibly vital for journalism.
And when it comes to women's organizations, do you find that women have more of a goal or a picture of what they would like to see or what they would like to avoid through the kind of pop news that we're getting on our phones every time you turn it on?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, especially in the context of Philippine news. Actually, previous Marsha McLuhan fellow was also a female journalist from Rappler. Oftentimes they're met with a lot of sexist vitriol and misogynistic comments. And that was especially fueled under the former president's Duterte regime, where he actually made misogynistic comments to actually the CEO of Rappler, Maria Ressa, as well as banning actually Pia Renata from the Malacañang, which is like their presidential kind of White House in the Philippines, from basically covering news that was coming out of there. So, you know, in terms of, I think, when we see in what women are looking for in media, is obviously, I think, for majority of Filipino women and also children, it's that is not misogynistic and sexist comments, which was riddled through Duterte's regime. And that kind of, you know, kind of fed in a lot of things, in especially in the social media age, where anonymity, as well as, you know, really no consequences for people to post, you know, really like horrendous comments towards women, as well as like Pia actually in her presentation, these like kind of like YouTube journalists, influencers who are not really journalists, mm-hmm. Making like long form content on YouTube with like really demeaning photos or unflattering photos of these female journalists as well. So yeah, it was, and I think it still is, we see the ways in which, you know, for female journalists, it's a really dangerous place to be still, but they still are passionate and committed to, you know, talking about what is happening in the Philippines, even if it means that they're facing violence or threats of violence towards them.
Do you feel that pop media is doing things to kind of drive a wedge between some women's organizations and LGBTQ plus organizations?
That's a great question. I think maybe just because of the current state of the world, a lot of things are polarizing. I think also in the way in which anyone is, you know, can accuse people of doing fake news. But I still think at the same time, I think, you know, social media, news outlets are still a way to bring together people to learn about, you know, the issues that are happening, especially, I think, you know, with issues that maybe are not covered all the time. For women and LGBTQ plus people, I think it is an important, I think, time for, you know, things to be written about the issues that are facing and kind of the effects that certain government policies that are affecting them are having to them in their real life. So though I think in general, the current state of the world, people are tending to divide, but it also, I think, still has the power to get people to be organized and to kind of raise their consciousness and bring them together.
What are your thoughts about that? I'm sorry, Michelle.
It's definitely, especially when it comes to like social media and such, there is this notion that we, that like online spaces tend to incentivize things such as like rage bait or like hate clicks, etc. But what I'm just reiterating what Maki basically said, throughout all of this, there are still chances for progressive organizations or media outlets to really create unity between different sectors, basically. And it's high time and incredibly important now as misinformation or disinformation is running rampant on the online space, which is why, like, yes, it's always the best way to, it's always better to have people like talk in person and have conversations like this, or even listen to radio shows like this or podcasts such as this for long form content. But utilizing social media to unite rather than divide is a call that many journalists should take up and take it seriously. Yeah.
I think what is a little bit frightening is even people understanding journalism versus stories. I did my minor in journalism and mass media at Wayne State, and when I was working in public health in Toronto, we used to walk up from one building to another, one part of the nutrition department. And I saw this guy with this hat when they crossed my path, and it was Marshall McLuhan. And so his concern at one point, there were so many people picking up on his ideas, he was one of the highest paid consultants. And now, because the medium being the massage or the message, not many people are talking about that. But do you see teaching of journalism eroding in universities or other centers of learning? And then the other question that excited me about your the meeting that you were offering last week is, what ways do you see the community open to people like journalists coming in and suggesting out campaigns or reading or, you know, other things they could do that would help bring back and make journalism something people could depend on?
Yeah, maybe I can contribute, Charlotte, to that. I had a long stint as a journalist in the Philippines. So when I came here, I also observed what's happening in the media here. And it's similar in many ways, in the sense that, people do not read the news, especially the younger generations right now. So there's the role of journalists and the importance, significance of these organizations have greatly diminished, especially in recent years. And even how the credibility of the whole industry has also been diminished, partly also because of attempts of despotic leaders to demean the media so that they can insert their own narrative, like what Trump has been doing in the U.S. And of course, our experience in the Philippines also. So there's a need really to engage in media literacy, in the sense that, especially among young people, on the importance of journalism and journalists in the community, and how journalism and journalists can help build our community and strengthen our democratic institutions, encourage public discourse. So those are the things that we should be focusing, especially with, even because news organizations here are closing, many are being laid off because most organizations are going online. So those are the economic circumstances also. So I think we need to push for such campaigns and advocacies to promote reading first, to read the news among young people, and of course to instill the importance of getting the right information from journalists and news organizations, and also to encourage the public to engage with news organizations on how they expect journalists to function or to play a role in building their communities. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I've observed here, Carla.
Now, I have a question to ask you, because about four times people have said with youth or young people, but the people that are in the baby boom and older group actually grew up at a time when we were writing letters, reading articles, having discussions about things that might have been in the newspaper, et cetera. What do you think about the importance of an intergenerational events, discussions, to help those who really didn't grow up with the foundation of journalism that people who were born in the 40s and 50s had, like me. But what do you think about it, intergenerational approaches?
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion, because that would impart the experience of earlier generations on even just the love for reading, right? Because people now are more into digital, they are born, they're internet natives, that they even have Some of you probably haven't seen a newspaper, printed newspaper for a long time. So maybe those sessions were earlier generation, those from earlier generations can impart or even read along with younger generations, sessions like this and sharing of ideas and concepts. Just the love of reading, the love of books, the love of everything that can give us information would be helpful instead of consuming endless tons of useless information online, right? So it's a difficult task or advocacy because we need to learn and unlearn a lot of things. But I think young people are open to that. Younger generations are open to that, especially if we can instill that habit on first the love of reading and then the love of news.
Yeah, I think another opportunity, you know, in the same building, there are about 30 different organizations that meet in this building, but Megaphone is a street paper. When I saw that that word being used, I thought, wow. I remember back in Toronto, there were street papers that talked about different things. There were music columns, but there were encouragements for people to criticize or take a look at food prices. Food prices is still an issue now, but you just hear people are generally complaining, or you hear commercials for people saying our juice is better than your juice, or we've got a crispy burger that's crispier than yours. If there are opportunities to look at the places maybe where seniors meet, their senior centers, their neighborhood houses, and make it known that you're interested in having people involved in this campaign, because the campaign you described is humongous. The campaign you described speaks to a time when people did research. So that's one of the things I was wondering last week when you were calling on the community to be involved, whether you specifically were calling into other communities to get involved with what you're doing here on trying to anchor and help journalism survive.
I actually wanted to kind of combine some of the answers that for the prior questions in regards to like how youth can be involved in either revitalizing journalism or being more involved in journalism. But we also need to kind of go back and have a little bit more of past analysis or past context as to why many youth are not particularly akin to like long form information and et cetera. And obviously we touched on it earlier, how media literacy is incredibly important, especially for youth to learn today. But it also comes down to the degradation of education in general. Nowadays, media literacy is not placed as an important thing, or even fostering the love for books is not even encouraged more so. And it's even more prevalent in places where democracy is like degrading at a rapid rate, such as like, let's say, the Philippines at the moment. Under Duterte, the rampant disinformation and misinformation happening and being consumed by youth is primarily because of the degradation of education there. It's almost incentivized to spread this type of like misinformation. And so the response for a lot of like youth organizations such as Anak Bayan is to not only fight back against those like wrong ideas and etc., but to actually conduct real journalistic kind of like almost quote-unquote journalistic investigation of communities, connecting with the people who live in certain areas, finding out what they actually struggle with, and raising that to a much bigger campaign and fighting for those rights as a way to not only just make people aware of a certain issue, but to actually involve them in that issue. It may not be a formal type of journalism, but it's some way that journalism and community building is hand in hand, and how we can actually protect our democracy in situations such as that. So, yeah, I think just kind of like to sum up all of that, all the answers that I had it's brewing in the back of my head for the prior questions on the perspective for youth.
What do you think of the Marshall McLuhan speaker, the opportunity that the awardee is going to have to travel across Canada? What type of perception do you think that they will get about journalism and freedom here?
I think it was mostly a positive perception, at least. Like when we, after the event, we were able to kind of mingle with a lot of other folks after the event and talk to, at least for me, talk to a lot of the youth members that we have from Anak Bayan, or even some of our contacts that we met there. It was an incredibly positive perception that, you know, journalism is something that needs to be preserved. It is something that's incredibly vital for our community, and that is something worth advocating for. Not only should we adapt to modern solutions of like creating either shorter form content with you know, proper accuracy, but also really fostering the curiosity to find truth and relay the truth. So that's kind of the overall feedback I got from the youth there.
Yes, the commonality rather than pitting one group against the other. There was a period when people were just making fun of boomers versus millennials. And totally. I think being able to recognize that in doing that, it destroys potential allies and potential ways to increase the number of people who are looking at democracy globally rather than making fun.
Totally. I totally agree.
Jesse, were you thinking of how can a radio station, you know, our ears and eyes were tweaked when we got messages about helping with community, build community. Jesse is the public affairs director at CJSF, the station that's bringing you this Suluau show where you get to speak up.
what was your question?
Well, the question was, what excited you or what possibilities did you see around community radio being a way of increasing community awareness of erosion of democracy, but also putting into practice people working together?
We are a radio station and thus get to share information and opinions and news with our listenership. So that's one big way of just keeping people informed. But by virtue of the fact that we are a community radio station where we welcome anyone to come in and learn how to make radio and put their voice on the air, that's also democratizing the media coverage in a lot of ways and incorporating a lot of different perspectives, but also building community within our station that we can then connect to community outside of the station. So, I think building community is a huge part of what we do as a campus community radio station. It's in the name because we serve the community, but it's also a big part of what we do and how we do it.
Nesta, I wanted to ask you, around belonging to so many different journalism organizations in the Philippines, do you find from other countries, near neighboring countries, that they welcome you getting involved in looking at the state of democracy or accuracy of news?
The Philippines is actually, while we have a vibrant press in the sense that we have many news organizations existing, we are unfortunately, the Philippines is also considered one of the most dangerous place in the world for journalists in terms of killings of journalists in recent years, in the past 3 decades. We are always on top of the list of that countries with the most number of journalists killed. And especially during the time of President Duterte, we had one of the most hostile environment for journalists, because it was the former President Duterte himself who was feeding